Hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Chris, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Okay, there it goes. It was doing that ringing while I could hear you still talking.
What are
Or
you
talking
doing,
while I could hear.
Harley? Don't
Is
wh how did why did you do that, Barb? You got her
Harley
another
home?
she got Harley with the cuckoo eyes where she goes crazy.
I'm calling for Harley. Is she home?
Yeah, she's here. And she's got the cuckoo eyes. She gave me a
Uh-oh.
headbutt yesterday. It hurt like a motherfucker.
I bet she's got a hard head.
It's like concrete. It's like slamming your head against concrete.
Harley, hi Harley. Come here, Mabel. Come talk to Harley.
Where's she barking at?
Barb? Barb's
Oh.
firing her up on purpose.
Really?
We keep bringing up when Carrie was on the guest bed and Harley went in there with her, and then I tried to go in the room and she barked at me, or she growled at me.
I heard that on the last episode. Oh
She was
my.
like, "No boys allowed."
I guess not.
That's right.
It was pretty funny.
Did you fear for your life?
Maybe I should have, because she hopped down off the bed coming towards me, and Kara was like, "Watch out." But I like Harley too much to run away from her.
She's harmless. I mean, the only thing you have to w watch out about is her strength.
Is her teeth and claws. That's it. Other than
Nah, her teeth doesn't. Unless you move,
that.
unless when she's barking, you move your arm into her bark.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, she's a good girl.
All
How are you guys
right.
doing?
Well, that was a good episode.
Yeah. How
How
about
is
that?
everyone today?
I hope you enjoyed the retro Harley episode.
There
There we go. Mabel's ready to go.
we go.
She's Let me get your headphones for you. They'd have to be interesting configuration with your ears. Those would be interesting looking headphones. I'm not sure how we need an engineer to design those.
Well,
Figure out how to make them work.
you took the week off last time because there was a
Yeah.
Comic-Con. Do you want to talk about any books you picked up, Rob?
Well, it sounded like Chris covered quite a bit, but and Chris was very accurate in his description of it being more than a hotel con just by the skin of its teeth. Last year it was like the whole convention center. They had several celebrity guests, if you're into that thing. They had quite a few artists. And this year they had Kevin Nolan.
Well,
They
that's
had
somebody you don't see very often at the big
yep.
cons.
Yep. They had Tony Isabella.
Was he there on Saturday? Because I
I
didn't
have
see
no
him.
idea. I didn't see him once.
I don't
Which
think he was actually there.
Tony Isabella or
Yeah.
Nolan? Yeah.
Isabella. I don't think he
Isabella,
was
yeah.
there.
I didn't see him once ever
I didn't
anytime
see
that
a
I walked
table
by.
for. Did you even see a table for him?
You know what? I wasn't specifically I didn't specifically notice. I noticed that I didn't
You
see, like you
should
said.
notice you bought a Black Lightning number one finally.
But not
You,
there. They didn't have
yeah,
one.
I know, but you should
Yeah.
have noticed.
Well, I
I
don't
was
think
look
he was there, because
I'm gonna
he
I'll
was
have
the only
to
one I was
ask.
really looking for.
Yeah, I'll have to ask them when I go back on Thursday to pick up my comics.
I think he may be
To see if
canceled
they
or
did it.
something.
Or maybe it just showed up on Sunday. I don't
What
know. But
What do you pick up at the store that you don't pick up through DCBS?
the only ones I really get are any of the comics, because I was in a huge transition.
Yeah.
That's when I decided to go to DCBS just shortly before Rebirth started.
Yeah.
So
You
I
still keep
started
your
to
pull list with them then.
yeah well I but it's very small now, because what I did was, as Marvel, like, because Marvel keeps rebooting over and over again,
Yeah.
right? So as something ended, I would tell them to take it off my pull list. And then when the new number one came up, out the following month or whatever, I'd start going to DCBS. So the only ones I'm getting from my comic shop are about five or six Image comics that have just been ongoing. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which has always been ongoing, and the X-Men books. I kept the X-Men books with them really for no reason other than to maintain
a full list of comics. Give me a reason to show up.
Exactly.
Basically, instead of breaking things off clean, you're just sort of letting it drift away.
Well, I still wanted to go. Like, it's not enough that I even go every week anymore. It's often that it depends. If there's not at least three books coming out from them, then I'll skip it and come back the next week.
Yeah.
But you know, as long as there's three books, I'll go in and hang, you know, just say hello and pick up my books and stuff like that and re-chat. I mean, I've been going there for like over 30 years, so.
Yeah. To keep that connection there.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I got,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I can see how that would be. You'd want to do that if you have that history there. Whereas, you know, when I actually got back into comics as an adult, I at that point didn't have a show anymore, or didn't have a shop anymore. So
you had a show when you got back into comics.
I didn't have a show either. No, I had to wait for Mike Myers to come along and introduce podcasting into my life.
If he ever closed,
actually, you were doing, weren't you doing Mythmaking ATC before that though? You had done some stuff, I think.
I think I maybe tried. I put some stuff out there. I forget what the actual timeline of it is. I might have had a little bit of stuff out there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you have your recorder running, just out of curiosity, Chris?
I'll put it on. I forgot.
Yeah, put it on.
What's wrong, Mike?
Nothing. I just don't trust mine very well.
So the only books I got a lot of cheap books.
Well, that's what some... you. It's good to go to. Like if you consider it a con anymore, you either go for the cheap, or you go for the big.
Yeah.
Something. In other words, something big that you can't find anywhere else, because all the stuff in the middle you can go to mycomicshop.com and get for cheaper.
Exactly.
So that's how you shop. That's how you should shop.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a lot of dollar books. You know, I've got a lot of Acclaim books. I filled out my Bloodshot Acclaim. I needed like four more, and they had all four in this dollar bin. I got all of the Eternal Warriors. You know, one shots that they did with the claim. They were all there.
There were quarterlies.
The
Warriors. They were thicker than a regular comic.
So I had never seen any of them before. So now I have all of them. So that was cool. And still needed a two or three of the Turoks that came out during Acclaim. Yeah. And I managed to get those too.
And if you're a completist, then you have to get the magazines too. Like I did.
I forgot about the magazines. Those are a little harder
to track down because people don't take magazines with them.
Exactly.
It's the size that's prohibitive.
But the only the more expensive books, and they weren't expensive, and Chris covered it. I got Mr. Miracle number one and Devil Dinosaur number one.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, good stuff. I think I have three copies of Devil Dinosaur number one.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'm like, I should.
It's one of those.
It's not a pricey book.
If there's a Kirby book and I can get it for a decent price,
yeah,
it's one of those things that I will get multiples of just because I think they're amazing. But I can't leave it by itself. I can't leave it if it stays there long enough, even if I already have it.
It needs a home.
It needs a home and my home.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, I had a good time hanging out with Chris and stuff. And I went to the Jack Kirby panel because it was, you know, his 100th birthday, of course, this year. So they did a panel of three or four, like huge Kirby fans, I guess. And they just talked about their experiences and what they like about his art. And was really well done, Chris. I was really I was pleasantly surprised. There wasn't a lot of people there, but the panel themselves were very informative. They had a slideshow and stuff, and they would show you different artwork. And it was just they really knew their stuff, and it was very entertaining to watch them talk. That was fun.
Cool.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Good times.
So you like how you asked if it was okay if we started 10 minutes later, and I was like, yeah, just join us when you're ready, and then right after that, I was like, I'm going to be a little late, like maybe 10 minutes, and then you were ready before I was.
I'm like, perfect. I looked at the time, I'm like, I'm not going to finish this comic book in time, because I was having visitors, small visitors kept coming into the room, and I wasn't able to concentrate. So I had to close the door.
Ah.
Yeah, had to shut them out.
Uh-huh.
Was the comic book our required reading?
I read that one first. So
oh, okay.
I was on to one of my picks.
Okay.
Yeah. But
what we talked about last time is we're going to try something different where one of us picks a book on a rotating lineup, if you will. And my first book is picked this week. And then I think the next recording will be like a Halloween special where we talk about three different Halloween movies.
I still have to pick my movie. I was going to pick the one that I watched last night.
Try to pick it sooner than later, just because
I know. Well, you know what?
That's
I was thinking
an hour and 40 minutes of time I have to schedule in. Yeah.
And I was going to, I was actually going to, I started to watch Night of the Comet, and you commented on
that.
Oh,
that's
that,
a good one. I like that one a lot.
But first, I have to, it's not on Prime, so I actually paid for it. And secondly, we had a busy day yesterday, and about 45 minutes in, I couldn't keep my eyes open, and I kept falling asleep and waking back up.
Yeah.
And that's no reflection of the movie, because I was enjoying it. I was just that tired. And then I woke back up 10 minutes with 10 minutes left in the movie. So I didn't even watch the whole thing.
You really need to watch it when you're awake.
Yeah. So
you can pick something without having seen it, though.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
A lot of times, like with how they do it on DC Noise, they pick the movie without having seen it.
Oh, yeah, but I want to. But I still have to watch it before the
thing.
Well,
I didn't watch the movie I picked. I had never seen.
No, I'm not saying that. I just mean I didn't actually keep my eyes open to watch this entire movie. So if I have a chance to watch it again before the rental expires, I could. But again, it's like a $5.99 rental, so I'd rather pick one that's free on Prime for everyone rather than force you guys to pay $6
choice. I saw the remake. I didn't see the original, so this was the original.
Of your pick?
Better, yeah. But
okay.
It's got the retro-ness to it, so maybe that's
I almost went ahead and watched it last night because it is free on Prime or whatever, I was just looking for something that I could pick. So anyhow, by the end of the day, Mike, I'll try to get a.
It's hard to pick
a movie out there.
A retro movie, though, on the streaming services because
yes.
One thing I realized is I love Netflix, but their movie choices are sparse.
Movie's bad. It's good for TV.
It's TV and serial type stuff. It's fantastic,
I think it used to be better.
Yeah, Amazon is better for the movies, but a lot of it's newer stuff. So there's a lot of new stuff available. But I was glad I ran across that. There was a couple other weird ones that that I saw when I was very younger. They had like Vampires or whatever, and I remember renting that because it was Vampires and Titties back in the day.
Why didn't you pick that?
Because it wasn't very good. That's why.
Chris, did you pick a movie yet or no?
I took a look. I probably just need to narrow it down between a couple so I can pick mine really soon, too.
Gotcha. Yeah. So we'll both pick soon so we can get those watched.
So that's what we'll do the next episode, and then I figure the following Chris can pick his book.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure. Because he liked me more than Rob or something? Or am
I? It's seniority before beauty.
Seniority.
Oh, okay. I guess we're not talking about actual life on Earth, then we're like on the podcast, right?
No, not seniority by age.
Right. I've got more seniority in terms of planet Earth than you.
Yes.
Chris, but not with the podcast.
Okay. Gotcha.
Well, my pick was, cool. I think we could do that first.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
It was Defenders 22. And let me just tell you, back in the day, I didn't read 22. I read 24, which you're kind of in the middle of the story arc. But when you're a kid, 24 is probably more meaningful because it's a battle. That's the battle scene. That's the Empire Strikes Back of the issues where everybody gets defeated. But that book got me into Marvel, like, comics before it was just DC for the most part. And I was blown away, and I never could find the other issues until, like, 6 or 7 years later when I started going to a shop and buying back issues. That's when I bought all the Champions and the Defenders. So my choice was based on, like, just one of the first Marvel books that just blew my mind. And also, I'm in a huge Steve Gerber mode. Like, I'm doing the Steve Gerber mode, like Howard the Duck. I talked about Howard the Duck last episode, and I wasn't all that big on issue one. But as soon as I got past issue one, I was like blown away by the social commentary. And this Defenders has a lot of social commentary in it.
And it sure does.
It's very, even though it's in 70s, like 73, uh-huh, it's very prevalent to the world around us right now.
Unfortunately.
Like, unfortunately, that's the damn shame of it. But yeah. This is the Sons of the Serpent saga, and they were introduced in Avengers prior to this, but they're a racial white organization that has a slogan about Adam and Eve. And, you know, they were driven from the Eden by a serpent, and their motto is to drive away all blacks, browns, and yellows, they call them, away from...
I mean, it sounded like one of Donald Trump's speeches.
It did. A matter of fact, if you read, how far did you read more than one, or did you just read the
book? No, I only read 22 this morning. That was it.
If in 23 or 24, there is a prose speech where the lead serpent is doing a speech, and it does sound like something.
I was actually going to joke that leader who got away was actually Donald Trump.
Yeah.
in number 22.
But the thing of this, the irony of the whole situation is when you find out who's leading the organization, your mind, if your mind doesn't get blown, I don't know. It's like I plowed through all of them because every time I read it, I can't stop. Because 22 ends on a cliffhanger.
Yep.
But it introduces a lot. I mean, it is a great introductory issue because it focuses on Valkyrie, who's kind of lost her identity, and she absorbed she absorbed somebody else's body.
Is this an early appearance of her? Is this how she started? Or
she came back.
I'm not familiar with her.
She's like a person that takes identities of other people, and that the identity of that person doesn't remember what's going on. So she's a married woman, And her husband come, like, Chris knows this because he read the first one, and he said, I couldn't, you know, he kept, he wanted to keep reading, so he finished it. But her husband plays a part in the series, and
Oh, okay.
it kind of plays a big part if you look at the what happens and how the tide has turned. But
I think, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Valkyrie was introduced early on in the Defenders series, right? Wasn't it like within the first few issues they added her in to kind of mix things up?
she's an early character, but she's had multiple identities.
But so it's that, so like what did we read? We read 22. So it's not like 21 was her first appearance or anything like that. It made it seem like she was almost brand new as part of the story arc, but you're saying she was around before that. Yeah. Okay.
But right prior to, I actually read 21. And so right prior to 22, there was a storyline that was getting deeper into her identity issues and the fact that the body was of a woman who had a past and had been married and stuff like that. So
Okay.
it was kind of, it's kind of fresh
Well, I'm looking at
material.
issue 20 saying it's the origin of Valkyrie, but not the first appearance of her. So, you know,
Keep
I'm not,
wanting to
I
say her first appearance
wonder
is
what her first appearance was.
Avengers.
Yeah, I'm not showing anything in the database, Mike, for Defenders as first
No,
appearance.
it's a Avengers because I'm pretty sure I own it, and it's I'm pretty sure that it's a Avengers prior to Defenders.
I need to get Defenders number 17.
What
It's
is
the
that one?
first appearance of the Wrecking Crew.
Oh yeah, that is another. Okay, that was 24 wasn't my first Defenders. It was my first Defenders with a cover on it. My first
Gotcha.
Defenders without a cover that I got from the garbage dump was that Wrecking Crew issue,
Really?
and it's
Oh,
got
cool.
Luke Cage in it too. Like it's a, oh man, and
Yeah,
I was
don't.
really fond of it back then. So like, I've always like looked. I know it's a bad costume, like, but I
What
love Luke
is?
Cage's original costume with the shirt.
It's a timely costume.
It's a timely costume, right? But if you look at black characters in comics, for some reason they all had this V thing where they could show their chest.
Yeah,
And
it, the only
I'm
the
even
one
talking
ex
about Legion of Superheroes, you know, like the guy that can scream Tyrak, or what is it, Tyrok,
yeah.
Black Lightning,
I never really thought of that before.
Falcon, you know, same V.
And they're all like 70s characters.
Right.
So that
But
could be part of the style because think about Black Panther. He still has a classic costume. But he was also earlier by
yeah,
maybe
he was
between
earlier.
5 and 10 years, you know.
Yeah. But
That's cool.
I've always liked the chain belt, and I've always liked the Wrecking Crew. I just thought the fact that they
Me
were all
too.
carrying like wrecking stuff, they've always been like one of my favorite villain groups. So yeah, that's funny that you mention it, but this issue, you know, it starts off with a bang. It's Valkyrie breaking up two kids from, she calls them kids, but they look more like adults. They're drawn more like adults. Sal Buscema was the artist, right? I think he drew all of those issues. She breaks up that fight and like lets them go. It's kind of like my sword is bigger than your sword kind of thing.
That's what she even said that. It's not the size of the sword that
Yeah.
counts.
It's
But
how you
how you
use
wield
it.
it,
It's how you
right?
use it, yeah. So yeah, she breaks up the fight, and then here's a scream, like a huge scream from a lady, and she chases it down to an apartment complex. She gets there, and a woman's like outside her door screaming, "My baby, my baby." For one thing, I think if it was their baby, she would have just killed that thing, like protected it with no cost. But
I was thinking the same thing. I'm
in
like, Seriously, you're gonna run out of the house?
In this case, she was more scared of the rat than she was at saving her baby. So luckily, Valkyrie was.
That was one big rat, though. To be fair,
it was big. It was
a big rat and feral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it was rabid. Not. It was not like a kindly rat.
No.
No. Although I haven't met a lot of kindly rats, but.
Oh, right. Mickey.
So she actually kills the rat, and then Valkyrie looks around and she sees poverty. So what it's also making a statement on poverty. So she takes the baby and takes him back to the mansion, Doctor Strange, and the baby's there with the Hulk, and the Hulk's like holding the baby with his big palm, and he's like he's like all happy, you know, playing with the baby. And this is the Hulk I like, the Hulk that almost has the mentality of like a 4-year-old or 2-year-old.
He's childlike, definitely.
Yes.
He's childlike, but has the power to move mountains. So it's almost dangerous. Like, you put a baby in this guy's hands, how is he gonna? It's almost like Of Mice and Men, you know.
Yeah.
Lenny was so strong and he didn't realize his own strength, so how would Hulk know it? But
I was thinking, like Frankenstein from the original movie, playing with that little girl and
with the flowers,
throwing her in the water,
the famous flower scene, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, what happens is Kyle Richmond is really rich, and he's kind of an asshole. I mean, Nighthawk is a fascinating defender. Like, he's always like, he's kind of like the Bruce Wayne, but he's so mischievous and not heroic and does stupid things. Like, if you read his Marvel 2-in-1 appearances and stuff, and he's always brooding on himself.
Mm-hmm.
Drunk driving. I mean, he does stuff that's not heroic. Well, there's an investor that plays a big part in this issue where he's trying to get Kyle to invest in real estate, and he turns out to be the real estate manager for the hotel that's rat infested. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Sons of Serpent strike. But they're not related. That's what's interesting. But
I like that too, because that would have been so simple to say, oh, he's part of it or whatever. But he's not. He's just not a rotten guy.
Yeah, he's like a real introvert and rich and has I can't remember how many rooms he has in his house, but it's a lot. But I love this story. I mean, what did you think, Chris?
I really liked it a lot. I thought it was interesting that it seems like people tend to complain nowadays. Some people tend to complain when there are political elements in their comic books, as if it's some kind of new phenomenon. And this is clearly not the case, you know. And I think it was kind of common, even more common in the 70s, for there to be political statements made in mainstream comic books in the 70s that kind of came up a lot. And it was interesting to see. Rob, I don't know if you mind if we
end up going into
the rest of the story at all or not. But speaking of Nighthawk, I just thought it was really interesting that they sort of addressed the, you know, the culpability of that it's not just that there's more, that there's an institutional racism, you know, and that Nighthawk, you know, finds out that his money is involved in the funding of the Serpent Society, you know, and that is what
freaking blew my mind when I read it the first time. And
yeah.
And then when they trace the money down to who it is, it's just unprecedented. Like, I don't know if there was anything like this before, but I know there's been plays on this in movies, like in other mediums, but I don't remember anything prior to this being like that, because the guy that's responsible for this is black. and his name is Pennyworth, and he works for Nighthawk.
Mm.
So it is freaking mind-blowing. I mean, it's just, and Luke Cage almost kills him.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you doing to our people? He's like, oh. I mean, they had to hold Luke Cage back, or Luke Cage would have killed him. I mean, he would have killed him. He just went ballistic on him.
I mean, it is. That's interesting as well, because, you know, things aren't, obviously things aren't so cut and dry all the time, right? And it's
no.
like, not only is it by, you know, it's not just by skin color. You know, there's a whole class, even, you know, in the United States, it's all whole class system that just because you're black, you know, he might be an affluent man that just doesn't have any empathy for other people, you know?
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting that I wasn't so simple, you know, that Nighthawk might sort of condemns the actions of the things that he's seeing, but as a white man, as Nighthawk being white, and as a white person reading it, it's like a reminder that, you know, it's not always so simple just to, like, it's so entrenched in our society, it's not as simple as just saying, oh, you know, I don't hate people that have different colored skin,
right.
You know, that actions that you're taking without even really realizing it might be supporting that institutional racism, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that in a really, so we have the example of Nighthawk, which is a really extreme one, that but it helps to hit home that maybe in a, you know, some in smaller ways that might be something that is happening in your own life, which I thought was an interesting thing.
Yeah, he was totally oblivious. Plus the foreshadowing, like early on in issue 22, the guy's trying to get him to invest in his company, and Kyle's kind of blowing him off. He's go see my assistant Pennyworth, and
yeah.
Pennyworth mm-hmm. is behind it. So he's like, you go talk to him about investments. I'm just totally not interested. So he's so oblivious to what his money's being spent on. All he sees is like the bottom dollar.
Yep.
And his money was funding the Sons of the Serpent.
And it's not yeah. unusual either. You can totally see, like you were making the parallel before, you can totally see, you know, a Batman story with the same thing where he's like, oh, I don't deal with any of that. Go see Lucius.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and so it kind of shows how you can be responsible through neglect, you know, that you don't have to actively be doing things that support hatred, that just by being neglectful or not being, you know, not paying attention or not caring, you know, just being oblivious or whatever, that you can inadvertently, like indirectly support people that are going to take that opportunity, or just like, you know, being lackadaisical, well, there's people out there that aren't going to be lackadaisical, and they're going to take advantage of that and like use your resources or use your silence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is about the Sons of the Serpent is they had so much weaponry. They could take out people with power. I mean, they had weaponry to take out the Hulk. They blasted him in the first one and kind of like set him back and then just left him there. But later on, they blast him with like this huge light beam where he goes blind, and they didn't care if he goes ballistic or whatever. He couldn't see what he was doing. He couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one scene in there where this guy's doing his speech. He says, "For two decades, this nation has felt the tyranny of the non-white minority, but no more. White and only white is beautiful." And then Hulk says, "Only white? Hulk is not white."
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up as like they still found a way to put some humor in it.
Yeah,
and that ended up with it also really made sense. Like that's the kind of logic Hulk would follow. You know, it's like
yeah,
for sure.
Not white. That doesn't include me. Whatever. So,
and I like the fact that we actually got to see Clea shine in her own way, because Doctor Strange, Nighthawk, Yellow Jacket, who just came to help coincidentally fight the Sons of the Serpent, was captured with Valkyrie. And the other thing they show is that Valkyrie can't strike another woman. And, like, Valkyrie's strength, she breaks free of the Sons of Serpent restraints. And she just starts kicking ass. I mean, she's beating the hell out of these guys. And then she goes to punch one of them, and it turns out to be a woman. And then that's when she lays up, and then she gets captured again. And then they put her on a reverse crucifix and try to burn her like a witch. But right. Yellowjacket, the other thing that's interesting about Yellowjacket, this was my first exposure to Yellowjacket. And to this day, there's something about Yellowjacket's costume that I absolutely love. Like, they got me into Bowen statues. There was so like I never bought statues. I was like, these busts suck. They're not full. They're not fully rendered. They're just from the waist up. But when I bought my first statue was a Luke Cage statue, and I was like, oh my god, it's like awesome. And then the next one I got was like Yellowjacket, and to this day, even when there's the female Yellow Jacket, I just love that costume. I know it's just all yellow. And one of my other...
Mike?
Yeah.
We're close to the... We're, you know, like 3 years apart. We're close to the same age. So he was featured on and off in the Avengers when I was growing up. There is something about his costume. That is the... like, anytime that... like, later when I got a little older, when he would go back to that costume on those rare occasions... I loved it. That costume is one of the best.
Yeah, one of my favorite comics of all time is Marvel Team Up, and it's a two-parter, and it stars Yellowjacket and the Wasp. And I also got it during this time period, so I have like this was my first exposure to him, so I'm like, who is this character? And I didn't know at the time it was, you know, Hank Pym. Like, I had no clue. He just came in. This was my first exposure to him. And then he's, like, very heroic in this one. Like, he's doing, like, heroic things. Mm-hmm. And he's only defeated because of the Hulk. The Hulk is trying to put out a fire. And he goes like this with his thunderclap. He goes, boom! and Yellowjacket was trying to save two kids from a building falling on him. And he was carrying them. And it knocks them out. So the wind knocked – I lose somebody?
No. I didn't want to interrupt, but I sent you guys a picture of First Valkyrie. It was Avengers.
Oh yeah, yeah,
83.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I knew it was the Avengers. That sounded made it sound like I lost connection.
Oh yeah. Because
that's when somebody hangs up, it goes bloop bloop like that, and I'm like, who did
Sorry
I lose?
Sorry about that.
That's all right. But I was like, the Hulk accidentally knocked him down from the air, and he fell on his ankle, and it looked like he broke his ankle, and he was in so much pain. When the Sons of the Serpents came, they could not he could not use his brain to shrink. Like, he couldn't even think. He was in so much pain. So accidentally the Hulk took him out trying to with this thunderclap trying to put out the fire, because there was a huge fire. I mean, then it's brutal. I mean, the Sons of the Serpent pretty much just get a rocket launcher on this housing development apartment and just blow up part of it. And you see, like, an old man burned to death. I mean, it's
all
you had
to buy, man.
It's brutal. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I agree with some of the things you said, Mike, about Hank Pym coming into it. I actually had the same thing with the Yellow Jacket costume, but it was the female Yellow Jacket in the 80s that I came across first. But yeah, I thought it was kind of cool to see Hank Pym as a leader depicted that way, and they comment on the fact that Hulk just straight up listens to him regardless.
Right. It's like, but that, if you look at it, like, at the time I didn't realize it, you know. But if you look at it, Hank had worked with the Hulk in Avengers.
Right.
So maybe the Hulk has some kind of, like, remembrance of his voice, you know?
Yeah, like, acknowledges that history.
He acknowledges that history there, and he knows he might not know he's not Hank, but he knows of his verbal voice.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this book has so much content. And the other thing that I love about it is Clea... when they're defeated, Clea has to call upon Avengers, and she calls upon Damian Hellstrom, Storm, which is my favorite one of my favorite characters. He's the son of Satan, and he freaking comes on his chariot of flaming horses, and like I just like, oh yeah. And then she calls upon Daredevil, and Bruce actually is, as Bruce, he just gets on the phone and calls Luke Cage, and he says, yeah, I'm the Hulk. And Luke Cage is, yeah, right, I know the Hulk, you're not the Hulk. So it's like, but he convinces him basically by telling him a lot of things that only the Hulk would know. So, or the Defenders would know. So he's like, heroes for hire. And he's got, I'm not taking any jobs right now. I got to take out these Sons of Serpents. And then he mentioned, well, that's what I need you for. And then Luke Cage comes. And, you know, they were trying to call Submariner and Silver Surfer and others, but they didn't get through. Mm. But, yeah, it's a pretty freaking awesome story.
Yeah, I did like the way that they brought in Luke Cage and Son of Satan and Daredevil later on to help the team out and stuff.
It's just subtleties. Like Daredevil lands and he sees, he can't see, but he's like, why am I detecting two heartbeats in the Son of Satan, you know? Because he's got that demon in him. He's like, why are there two heartbeats in this guy? It's fascinating stuff. I love this book so much.
Yeah, you picked a very interesting one to read with all, some good social commentary in it, too.
Yeah.
And I thought so.
Definitely. Yeah, I recommend the whole story.
Yeah, I'll go and read the, although I'd have to pay for each issue, so I don't know that I'll actually will do that. But if it was free, I probably would.
Yeah, it actually worked out well for me because for some reason there's gaps in the Defenders issues that are on Marvel Unlimited.
Yeah, this didn't happen, and did it?
No, it doesn't have this storyline for some reason. But at some point, I wanted to be able to redefend the whole Defenders run, and I haven't actually done it. I didn't actually end up doing it yet, but one of the times that they had the buy one get one sales on Comixology, I bought some of the issues to fill in the gaps, including these. So I happened to already have them. So that's kind of that's why I went ahead and read all of them.
I'd be more likely to just go and actually buy the physical books then.
Oh, and is water wet as well?
Yes. I like how Mike's been doing it. Because if I actually ever got Marvel Unlimited, that's exactly what I would end up doing. Oh my God, this series is so good. Now I have to find them on my comic
shop. That's what I'm doing with Howard the Duck right now.
I know.
So. Because...
So. Now you get to pay twice.
I've experienced a lot of Gerber, but for some reason I never read Howard the Duck. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of social commentary in that, too. I mean, he actually runs for president. But, there's a couple of things that I've read on Marvel Unlimited, which I do enjoy, that I wouldn't have picked up. But because I liked it so much, I'm ordering it. So, like, I'm ordering Howard the Duck 1 through 10, which is what I've already read. I've read up to, like, 12, I think, but that's what I'm ordering on my next purchase.
Very cool.
And then you have Gene Colan artwork. Oh, my God. I just love his art. Like, it's really good artwork. It's so very weird because nice. They're dirt broke too. Like it just shows like commentary on trying to live from day to day.
Yeah.
Him and Beverly, like Beverly's dirt poor too. But I'd recommend this Defenders arc. For me personally, it's my favorite Defenders arc. It what got me into the Defenders. It was my first Marvel comic after Champions that I completed, because Defenders had a lot more comics than Champions, but it was the first one that I went into the back issues when I found there were stores that had back issues that I went and completed the run. And that's when I was mowing grasses and stuff. So it was a slow process. It was buy two of them every time I was able to get to the shop. So it took a while.
It was probably fun, though.
Yeah, it was exciting because I didn't know you could get back issues. Like I didn't know it existed at the time. Like if you didn't buy it off the spinner rack, I didn't know where they went to, other than I had gotten them from the dump with the covers torn off. I was like, they end up in the trash and I never get to see the cover. I'd had no idea. But
you got one, Chris?
Yeah.
Hmm?
You want to do one?
Sure. Let's see here. So, reading all the Defenders, I decided to stick with Marvel. And I decided to jump back into my ever-going, slowly read of the Marvel Universe from the beginning that I will probably have not made that much progress on when I pass away. But so I just picked up where I left off, and that had me at Amazing Spider-Man number 24.
Okay, and so what are you doing? You're reading everything from Marvel in chronological order?
Yeah, pretty much. All the Marvel superhero stuff.
Okay.
And I skipped some stuff, but I've read most of it from the beginning, from Fantastic Four number one. And I'm only this far after several years, so I just do it every once in a while when I feel like it. I pick up where I left off.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is Amazing Spider-Man number 24, which turned out to be a pretty interesting issue. Its main plot is that this guy named Dr. Reinhardt comes to the Daily Bugle and tells Jonah Jameson that Spider-Man is probably going to go insane because of his dual identity, you know.
Oh,
whatever.
I just read this like a month ago.
Yeah, I figured you probably had, because I thought you went past this point. And
yeah, I'm up to like 40 Spider-Man. Something right now, but yeah. This is a good one.
Yeah, so it was a good one because although it does end up involving a supervillain, the actual issue itself doesn't really have the traditional kind of setup. And there's a lot of good stuff. I would say this was a better script as far as, or it was a standout script from Stan Lee. There was a lot of fun little moments of interaction between the characters and stuff. I mean, it starts off with Peter wanting to, you know, typical situation for Peter at this point. He wants to try to make some money to help out Aunt May. And so he goes out as Spider-Man and finds some crooks robbing a store, sets up his camera, and it's interesting to see that he actually kind of draws things out to make sure he gets enough photographs. You know, he could have dealt with these crooks really quickly, but he actually takes his time just to fill up his roll of film. But then Foswell, one of the other, a reporter for the Bugle, shows up. So basically ruins the situation. And I thought that was kind of, because he can't say that, now he can't say that he got pictures as Peter Parker because Foswell saw that Peter Parker wasn't there to take the pictures. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a clever, we've seen at this point already a couple years in, you know, Peter Parker doing this a lot, taking pictures of Spider-Man and it working out for him. So I thought that was neat to throw a wrinkle in there. And we still have the situation with Peter and Betsy writing to Ned Leeds. And so there's that romance drama continuing where Peter is still kind of seeing Betsy.
Is it Betsy or Betty Brant?
Betty. Yeah, Betty.
Am I saying Betsy? Betty. Yeah, Betty.
Betty
Brant. Say Betty. Yeah, so Betty. So anyway, yeah, this psychiatrist comes and he says that Spider-Man is setting himself up for a breakdown and that he can provide proof of his theory, and Jameson is obviously interested because even just recently he's had a reporter out on the streets interviewing people to say why they hate Spider-Man, because he gets the idea that it shouldn't always be him saying that Spider-Man is terrible. So he has this reporter out on the streets and he's asking this woman and she says, I never said I do hate Spider-Man. but he's basically leveraging, like, look, do you want your name and picture in the paper or not? So people are basically making up reasons to hate Spider-Man so that they can get themselves in the paper. And of course, Flash Thompson comes along and he's Spider-Man's biggest fan. So, he starts threatening the reporter and following him along, but then he sees one of the other things going on in this issue is he sees Liz Allen and Peter together, and Liz is asking Peter to help her with her science homework and stuff. So he goes after Peter and starts threatening him for talking to his girl and stuff. So Peter finds out about this Dr. Reinhardt in this article that is saying that that Spider-Man is going to crack up and become a mental case. And so he starts freaking out, and throughout the issue really just has like a panic attack, worrying about the fact that he's going to go crazy as Spider-Man, living this dual life. And as he's starting to worry about this and he's flying across the city as Spider-Man, he sees Dr. Octopus. But then as he goes to fight him, Dr. Octopus disappears. And then same thing happens with Sandman and the Vulture. They keep appearing and not saying anything. And so he thinks that he's hallucinating. He goes home, changes out of his costume, looks in the mirror, and he's sweating and he's white as a ghost. And so he hears Aunt May coming. He doesn't want her to see him in such a state, so he takes off, worrying her even further, because he leaves without saying anything and doesn't even close the door behind him. So he decides at this point that he is going to go see this psychologist, and he goes in to the psychologist's office, and he sees a light shining in the back that must be where the office is, as he goes through the waiting room and stuff. And when he opens the door and everything is upside down. The psychologist is seated at his desk on what looks like the ceiling. Even the psychologist's word balloons are upside down. So Spider-Man freaks out even further. He's about to run out of there. And he turns around, and the waiting room that he had just come through is upside down. So he thinks, I can't leave here because I'm obviously going crazy. And on top of everything else, he's worried that if he does go crazy, he knows how strong he is and what a danger he could be to other people. So he goes back in to the psychologist. He's breaking down, and the psychologist reassures him that he can help him. And he seats himself down on the psychologist's couch. He starts seeing his villains attack again. The psychologist reassures him, I don't see anything. It's not real. It's just another symptom of your schizophrenia. So he gets Spider-Man to relax, and then he starts talking to him and trying to get him to reveal who he really is so that he can help him. In the meantime, one of the Bugle reporters comes rushing in to the office and tells Jameson that he's researched this Dr. Reinhardt and found out that he is a phony. So Jameson freaks out, says, you know, kill the feature. We're going to be running I'll be a laughing stock if I publish it. And so he goes rushing out. He takes the taxi to Dr. Reinhardt's place. Meanwhile, Flash Thompson is still out on the streets walking around, seeing if he runs into Parker and Liz Allen. When he sees Jameson and he goes after Jameson, and is yelling at him because of the way that Jameson treats Spider-Man in his paper. And Jameson is amusingly dismissive. Thompson is asking him why he doesn't pick on the Human Torch or the nutty X-Men. And Jameson asks him why he doesn't go play in traffic. So Jameson rushes into Reinhardt's place just as Reinhardt is kind of talking Spider-Man into, if not telling him who he really is, telling him who some of the people he cares about is. I mean, he needs this information basically to help him. Just when Jameson rushes in and accuses Reinhardt of being a crook, and then Flash comes in following him and tackles Jameson. And Flash is amusingly excited to see Spider-Man there. He says, "I've always dreamed of fighting at your side." Jameson says, "Let go of me, you teenage psychopath." So in the confusion, Reinhardt tries to escape. And Spider-Man sees the hallucinations again, but he realizes that they're going off from some machine that's causing them. And he pursues Reinhardt out into the lobby waiting area and tackles him and is able to demask him and discover that it's actually Mysterio that's been causing all of this. The amusing thing about it, of course, is that Jameson realizes, and Flash Thompson is quite amused at that, it's Jameson that actually kind of saved Spider-Man. And Flash is over the moon. He's, "What a day, what a triumph. I actually saw my idol in action. He even spoke to me. Even if he did call me a fool, he spoke to me." "Boy, even that useless, sneaky, meat-headed Peter Parker couldn't spoil the way I feel now." So it ends with some more relationship drama to kind of carry things into next issue, where Liz Allen is out with a friend of hers and they see Peter Parker, and Liz basically just runs away from her friend to talk to Peter and ask him again for help with her homework, and her friend is ticked off to be left behind and plans on telling Flash Thompson about this. And but Peter takes Liz back to his house to tell Aunt May that everything's okay, and then he goes off with Liz to help her study. So yeah, I thought it was a really fun issue. That technically there, you know, you have Mysterio involved, so there is a supervillain, but there isn't the traditional several pages of a physical battle between the two. It's more of a mental thing, and it's almost, elements are almost like it's a comedy with Jameson and Flash. And I like the way how there are a lot of different moving parts to the plot. I like the way that they all came together.
Cool.
This was one of my favorite early issues. I think for all the reasons that you said, I think it's kind of a step above a lot of the other issues that preceded it because of that. It was just a little bit different, where it was all psychological, and it did have those humorous elements. And I mean, it's just hilarious that it's actually Jameson that saves Spidey from getting his secret ID revealed. You know, it's just really, really funny. Really well done.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, it was fun.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a good one. So.
Well, you want to go next, Rob?
I suppose I will. All right, so I'm going to talk about Adventure Comics number 469. And this was shortly after the dollar comics stopped. And they went back to a monthly 40 cents each month. What was it before? Was it quarterly or bi-monthly? I'm not even sure.
I think it was bi-monthly.
Yeah. So
they were all dollar books, and then this one came back.
Yeah, it came back every month, but only a regular yeah. comic. So it was 40 cents. So this was it highlighted Starman. This is the outer space Starman, Prince Gavin, and Plastic Man. So the first story is the Starman story, and it's by Paul Levitz and Steve Ditko. And it is the origin of Starman. Now, he debuted a couple issues before, but they hadn't gone into who exactly he was and what his origin story was. So what it turns out is that he's actually the prince on this particular planet. And he has, they don't really say if it's a wife or girlfriend. I'm assuming it's a girlfriend named Maria. And he's got a sister as well. And they go on to say that it's a very stable government. The emperor there is fairly young. And so basically Prince Gavin just, you know, spent his time doing gravity ball tournaments, which looked like some sort of, what's the game called where you're on a horse and you hit a ball?
Polo.
Polo. It looks like polo. Thanks. And right away, an Imperial warship comes and announced that the emperor has died. And so what that means is that this council will decide who is going to be the next emperor or empress based on the family. And the interesting thing is that whoever gets picked to be the new emperor or empress, everyone else that was in that potentially could have been chosen is then executed to keep a civil war from happening. This is how they explain it. So Prince Gavin says, well, if I end up getting picked, you know, I won't let you be executed, sister. And she thinks that he's a fool, that they can't change a millennia of history. So very quickly, it goes on to say that the council has already elected somebody, and it ends up being his sister. I'm trying to pronounce this. Looks like Clarissa or Chrissa or something like that. So Empress Chrissa is now the Empress. So that means that that Prince Gavin has to die. And he's like, you know, I ask you, you know, will you save me as I would have saved you? And she said, I told you we can't tamper with traditions. So he's going to be executed. His girlfriend / wife, whoever it is, the Empress says, you know, don't worry, I'm going to adopt you into the new Imperial family. So they take him away, and basically what they're going to do is they're going to end up, they're out in outer space, they're actually going to throw him out of the airlock. A guy comes to give him his last meal, and then starts whispering to him that, you know, there's a lot of people that want to see him free. And no sooner does they start arguing about this, no sooner does that happen. But then the guy, because Prince Gavin is arguing, this guard starts like attacking him and saying, no, we're basically taking you as for, you know, with force, because you're going to be our pawn. You're going to be like our hostage. And So he starts fighting that guy. He beats him up. And then more troops come, loyal troops come and said, this is it. This is the end. It's time to go. And he goes ahead and goes to the airlock and gets blown out of the airlock and starts just floating off into space. And that's the end of this particular issue. So it's got a cliffhanger here to see exactly how he ends up getting his powers. So up to this point, you only see his background story, and you see up to when he quote unquote died before he ends up getting his powers. So this was interesting, but I don't have the next issue. This is one of the dollar books that I got at the Comic-Con. There's a bunch of Adventure Comics that I picked up around this particular era, but I didn't get the next issue, so might have to track that down.
Or you could go digitally and read it and then track it down.
No.
If you don't want to break up the momentum.
I'm okay. And then the second half is a Plastic Man story by Martin Pascal and Joe Staton. And this picks up from the previous issue where they're trying to find a spy that's been stealing parts for some sort of like kind of a laser device. And in the previous issue, this guy called the Whirling Dervish. Right at the end, they kind of cornered him, and somebody threw a knife in his back, and he died. So this picks up exactly after that. Plastic Man and Woozy Winks, his sidekick, are there, and they're trying to figure out what had happened. And they're investigating the room that the Dervish was in, and they notice that the Dervish was recording conversations with whoever his boss was. And the reason why he was killed in the previous issue is that he left his recorder on, his actual communication device on, after he talked to his boss, saying that after he's done with his mission, he's going to come after his master and kill him. So the master got to him first and killed him. As they're discussing this, I guess I should give some background that this Dervish was a ballet dancer and they're in his dressing room. And his girlfriend comes walking by and hears this tape recorder going. And so she comes in and says, what's going on? And they explain the situation. And she knows who the other voice was. It's a person named Alex. And she shows him a picture that is obviously some crazy, crazy disguise. He's got this huge wig, these huge sunglasses, and this enormous mustache. So, but they have a name, and they said, okay, thanks. So they go to where this guy is staying, and his name is Alex Pincus. So they go in there, and they find the disguise, and they hear the door start opening, so they go hide. Woozy goes and hides under the bed. Now, are you both familiar with Woozy Wink's size? And what he looks like physically.
Pretty round.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's trying to hide under the bed. However, on the opposite side of the bed, his entire ass and legs are sticking out from the bed.
Of course, because his first part of his body is kind of thin, and then he just, around the belly, he's got that shape.
Yeah, so he's in there. So his head is in there, but his whole back end is sticking out. So. Mm-hmm. This guy comes in, Alex Pincus. He's an albino that is wearing total white. So he's white from head to toe. He's got this device in his hands. Plastic Man has turned himself into a TV. Immediately, Pincus notices Woozy under the bed and kicks him from one side of the under the bed to the other side, knocks him out against the wall. And then he's looking around. He's like, wait a minute. He's like, there's a TV on the floor, but there's also a TV on the nightstand. It's like, there's only one TV in this place, and then Plastic Man starts fighting him. And he starts shooting this laser all over the place and backs Plastic Man into a corner, but it's a corner with some windows. So he extends his leg out one window and into the other window all around and kicks the guy in the back of the head and grabs this laser device, and at that point, Pincus gets up and starts trying to karate chop Plastic Man. But, of course, Plastic Man is just letting the chops go right into him. And he springs him back against the wall and knocks him out. And so they end up getting the device for – they work for the NBI instead of the FBI. It's the National Bureau of Investigation. And so they turn over the device to the NBI and end the issue with Plastic Man saying, "That's right, Woos. Looks like old Pink Eye is going to get the pink slip." And NBI officer just starts groaning because of the bad pun. So this was a pretty fun issue. I like the Plastic Man more than I like the Starman, but I'm kind of a Plastic Man fan, and it's fun to read some of his stuff, because I hadn't read a lot of it, his stuff from the 80s and 70s when I was young. So I'm reading a lot of it for the first time.
Yeah, but you'd like his Golden Age too.
Oh, I'm sure I would. Yeah,
I definitely like Plastic Man more than Starman. I mean, there were a couple of good Chris Gavin, but he's like not my favorite Starman for sure.
Yeah, and I mean,
I've been like the Blue Hippie long. Guy a little more.
I think I do too. Yeah.
So for me, it's Jack, and then the Golden Age Starman, Ted, and then the blue skin guy, and then probably Peyton.
And then
rounding up last is him.
I would have to. I'm actually 100% with you. That would probably be my same order.
I did bond a lot with Peyton though. He had some pretty good stories in his series.
I think I only bought the first two issues and then never.
Yeah, he's got some pretty good ones in there.
You know what I would like, though? I definitely at some point would like to get a Golden Age Police comic. I don't care which one it would be.
Yeah.
I just want to get one to actually say I have one and to read it.
I have those, mostly because I was searching for the Human Bomb, but then there's some Golden Age Plastic Man covers that are just – they're mind-blowingly awesome. They're just so freaking awesome. That I have a handful of them. I have a handful of Plastic Man. I have two or three Police comics, mostly because of Human Bomb and Phantom Lady, but Plastic Man's in them. But and anytime I can get a good deal on a Plastic Man or a Shazam Captain Marvel family book, I jump on it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they're just amazing covers. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
So my next pick is Marvel 2-in-1. But tell me if you've covered this, Chris. I know you covered so many of them. Did you cover the very first one?
I don't think
so. It's Thing and Man-Thing.
No.
Okay,
that sounds like a good one.
This is a Steve Gerber book.
Oh.
Drawn by Gil Kane. And, man, Gil does a hell of a, usually when I think of Gil Kane, I think Green Lantern. I don't know why, but I know his style from Green Lantern and Superman. He has, a very distinctive style. If I was to guess this was Gil Kane interior, I would have never guessed. I would have thought it was somebody else.
Cover is incredible.
Yeah, Jim, this is another one I'm going to buy, but...
This is a beautiful cover.
I don't own, but I read digitally. This story takes place as our ever-loving blue-eyed thing is reading articles at a bookstore about this man thing, and he's like, "This guy's stealing my name. He's stealing my thunder." So he gets mad and gets on a bus. Which is very strange. He just gets on a bus to go to the Swamplands and meet this character. It does give some of the backstory of Man-Thing. So, if you weren't familiar, it gives... If you know Swamp Thing, you pretty much know Man-Thing. The origins are so damn similar. It's I can't believe somebody wouldn't sue the other person. But
it really makes me wonder how that works sometimes.
Yeah, it's just amazingly the same. Like, they're both working on a serum. The only thing that's different is he's working on a super soldier serum for the army, and the other guy was working on something to better plant life, you know, plant growth, you know, swamp thing, Alec Holland. But they have similar circumstances where, you know, some villains are after the serum, and he ends up, you know, injecting it into himself. But the main thing of this story is it's kind of cool because the Fantastic Four, if you know Molecule Man, which he was really beefed up in the Marvel Secret Wars, the first one, Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, Molecule Man. He was a very powerful character. But in the Fantastic Four is where he originated. And the Watcher had... Usually the Watcher doesn't get into anybody's business, but he banished Owen to this planet where he would just age very rapidly. And he was banished with his son. And he essentially died in this Marvel 2-in-1. He just aged until he dissipated. We know he didn't die because he appears in other things, but he dissipated in this issue. And he said, "Son, you got to seek my revenge on the Fantastic Four." So his son has like a wand that he is able to channel his molecular capabilities, which similar to Firestorm, he can't do anything to organic matter, but he can do anything he wants with inorganic. But that's not necessarily true, because with his son, he is able to, when he arrives, he says, "Take me to the Fantastic Four." And he's like, "Where the hell am I? I'm in the swamp. Why am I in the swamp? Why am I not at the Baxter Building?" And he's at the swamp because the thing's at the swamp. And one of the first things he does when he sees these two characters is he turns them back to their Ben and Ted. Was that his name? I can't remember his name. Salas is his last name. But Ted. Yeah, mm-hmm. Ted. He turns them back to their human beings, and this is like a blessing. You know, Ben, since he's turned into the thing, has wanted to be Ben again. Like, he wants to be his human counterpart. And Ted never really knows what he is. Sometimes he'll get flashbacks of what he is, but he's often a creature that goes through the swamp. And not like Swamp Thing is definitely a smarter character when he's turned into Swamp Thing and he's an elemental than Man Thing is a smart character. He's like the guardian of this nexus, which Howard the Duck came through, if you follow that stuff. But so he turns him back, so that's like a blessing as revenge. And Ben's like telling Ted, "We gotta get back. I need it to become the thing, or he's gonna go after my family and kill them." So he eventually blasts them back, and they get into a fight because Man Thing he forgets who he is or what he's doing, and they get into this huge brawl. But they end up knocking the wand away from Molecule Man's son, and then he ages rapidly just like his father did, and he dies. So that's how they defeated him. His thing just knocked the wand away from him. And on Earth it was the opposite. He aged like his father did in that other planet, so as soon as the wand left his hand, he just deteriorated. But it was a really cool story. I enjoyed it.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that cover. I only have like two or three issues in this entire series.
Yeah, Chris has been reading quite a bit of them lately. His Marvel team up in 2-in-1.
Yeah, I end up with a handful of them just from a cheap bin somewheres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. I like
that. All right, well, I can piggyback off of that one in some respects, because I read an issue of Fantastic Four, and that would be issue 38 specifically. And This is a cover that has the Frightful Four in their anti-grav sphere with the Fantastic Four in the background. So it's not a dream, not an imaginary tale. It had to happen sooner or later. At last, the Fabulous FF are defeated by the Frightful Four. Mm-hmm. And it starts with an interesting flash page. It has the three men of the FF standing on a gray background, which is just full of machinery, and it's very Kirby, and it's interesting.
What issue was it, Chris? I'm sorry.
38.
Okay, uh-huh.
And it's interesting because Stan basically writes all over it. There's a huge huge title, and then there's a big caption that says, "No, Jolly Jack Kirby hasn't finally popped his cork. There really is an explanation for this scene. Reed, Ben, and Johnny are standing on a huge, oversized blow-up of a photo which their automatic cameras took while they were returning to Earth from the Skrull Galaxy. But if you're wondering what it's a photo of, welcome to the club." So, I mean, it's totally unnecessary. You can figure that out on the next page, what they're standing on. There's also, you know, your usual credits, and then a caption that tells you that, you know, they think this issue's awesome, and we hope you will do too. And then also one that says, "Introducing one of the most unpredictable villains of all time. Wait till you see the Trapster." So yeah, once you flip the page and you see that they're standing on a big photograph and that they have several other ones and they're examining, and then Sue sneaks up invisible behind Reed and musts his hair. So then there's this kind of play sequence for a couple page where she tries to sneak away, and Johnny and Ben help Reed stop her from getting away. But then we get into the issue proper, where we see the Wizard heading back to the hideout where the rest of the Frightful Four are. And we're introduced to the fact that, though they made it sound like a new villain, the Trapster is actually Paste Pot Pete. And he says,
best name ever for a villain. Yeah.
He says, actually, "This is as good a chance as any to use my new traps. I'm through being called Paste Pot Pete. It sounded too much like a comic title." So he shows off that in addition to his old ability, he's got these new traps and stuff, as that he uses some of his paste to cause him to adhere to people. Like, he throws one at the Wizard, and we get another splash page, which is notable because you didn't see these as often at that time. And when the Wizard gets tired of all the hijinks and he uses his powers to knock the other three into paying attention, the other two I haven't mentioned being Sandman and Medusa. And so then their plot to take out the Fantastic Four gets underway, and it starts with Medusa abducting Sue. She pretends to be a new fashion designer. Sue is out, you know, on the east side in a boutique, and she shows up and very quickly uses her hair to constrain Sue and Paste Pot Pete. Oops, I'm sorry. Trapster climbs in the window and uses his paste to bind her legs before she can slip away. And the Wizard helps them transport her away. And then only a few hours later, the newspaper has a lead story on her being abducted. and the thing is flying by in the fantastic car, and here's them shouting the news, and so he grabs somebody's paper and catches up with Reed and Johnny, who are already getting ready to try to rescue Sue. So eventually they catch up with where they track the Frightful Four down at their base and find them. As they're approaching, the four get back in their anti-grav sphere, and the three Fantastic Four members try to stop it. Reed actually has a hold of Ben and has to let go of him, but Ben manages to dig his fingers into the side of it with his strength and hold on. They think that Johnny is being careless and getting the flame in the way, but it's actually flame that's ejected from the anti-grav sphere. It causes Reed and the thing to have to let go. Reed rescues Thing by stretching his body out between two buildings, and Johnny on his own tries to go and break into the sphere, but they open one of the hatches and Sandman floods it with his sand and drowns Johnny in it. It puts out his fire, and then the Trapster winds him up with asbestos tape. So it's down to two. Reed and Ben get in the pogo plane and try to pursue the sphere. They pursue it back to the Frightful Four's base, the plane is destroyed just as they're landing. So they throw Johnny out as a decoy, but that allows the other two to rescue him, and then there's a battle that ensues between the three of them and the Frightful Four. What I thought was most interesting is that, meanwhile, we really haven't seen many applications of Sue's powers besides turning invisible to this point. And I know a lot is made about John Byrne and later authors really increasing her power levels, but I did think it was neat that she kind of at least partially frees herself. She does get herself free of the binds of the paste by using her force field and getting it in between the binds and breaking them with her powers. It's just she's really weak, and because they had subjected her to sleeping gas, so she starts making her way out of the base as they're fighting above, and the other three do have to come in and rescue her. But I thought it was kind of cool that she initially freed herself. So they have to deal with the fact that at this point the Frightful Four decide to escape, but the Fantastic Four have to deal with the fact that they have left behind a atomic bomb of some sort. So the Frightful Four take off in their anti-grav ship, thinking basically at this point that there was no way for the Fantastic Four to escape before the bomb goes off, and they watch as they're flying away the explosion. The Fantastic Four do survive, of course, but again, I thought it was really neat. The way that they survive is that Sue protects them in her force field, as we'll see her do in the future. But the caption says, protected by the fantastic power of one girl, a girl whose will to survive is so strong that her force field remains even though she is unconscious. So even though she's still being called a girl, I thought it was neat that she's the one that's responsible for saving them. And then, though they don't leave it as a cliffhanger whether they survive, again, something that we'll see a lot in the future, but haven't so much at this point, we see there is a cliffhanger in of a sorts, in that we see that Ben is reverting to his human self as the four of them are lying there unconscious. So, yeah, I thought it was neat. The Frightful Four show up a lot in this era, but I thought it was a good like escalation of the conflict between the two groups. And the Fantastic Four are, of course, surviving, are kind of victorious, but it's not just like a straight, clean victory. So mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting in that regard, too.
I know I asked, like, I asked you this probably a year ago, and now I don't remember. And Chris, I don't know, you might know as well, but if you guys can remind me why it is that Medusa was part of the Frightful Four, I don't remember.
I had to look that up because I didn't remember either, even though this isn't her first appearance, but it turns out that she lost her memory.
Ah.
Okay. I believe. And so then eventually when the Inhumans are introduced, she also regains her memory that she's one of them.
So she appeared before the Inhumans?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so she was...
Her first
appearance was
before Black Bolt and the other guys.
Oh, so she was a villain when she was created. And then they established after the fact that she was an Inhuman and had lost her memory?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting. Speaking of Inhumans, I know this isn't retro, but can you believe people don't like that show, Mike?
I can't believe it because they don't know how to enjoy TV. They can't just sit back and just relax. They tighten their sphincter and look for everything.
You're killing me.
But really, they need to loosen their sphincter and just relax a little bit.
Oh, that is funny.
I mean, it's not the best show, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, if you look at the concepts and stuff, they're really well done. Like the high-level concepts. And I think Maximus is a really good Maximus. He's, like, really good. He's a good villain.
Yeah, and you know what? And
Black
as
Bolt,
it
too,
goes
does
along,
a,
it's not...
The guy who plays Black Bolt, I think he does a lot of good things with facial expressions. It shows like emotion and stuff, and I dig it. I like that they cut off Medusa's hair like they did in Paul Jenkins' run. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Daryl liked
that
too.
There's just like little things that I really enjoy. So I haven't seen the latest, but I've seen the first three. Premiere.
I'm with you.
The premiere had the first two episodes, and then I like how they introduced the caste system too, and like how the Inhumans work.
Well, and what I was going to say is like with Maximus, and as it goes along, you're seeing more of an evil side of him. But when you just take the first episode or two, it's like, is he really up to that point? Is he really that bad? I mean,
no, because he's almost like he's looking at things from a different perspective. Like,
right.
Is he really the bad guy? I mean, he is the bad guy, and if they play him right, he's very much like Loki. Like he has no ill. You know, he's not got a good intention, mm-hmm. but in this series, you kind of could have sympathy towards him because they have those scenes with them as kids and stuff, and you kind of see, oh, you will never be king. You will never, you know, he went to the Terrigen Mist and became human. So he had the worst of the worst, and the only thing that kept him out of the mines and stuff was the fact that he was part of the royal family. I like it a lot. And you know what I do? I try to just ignore him because if I get frustrated, with people in social media. I just let them hate all they want, and people love to hate, and they swarm around like bees, like to honey. When somebody mm-hmm. hates something, when somebody loves something, you don't so much see a lot of bees to honey. But when people hate something, it's just like, and I just try to avoid it.
Yeah.
Unless somebody tags me or something. But I don't take my TV seriously, and I'm okay. Like, I actually prefer when my TV goes away from the comics, because I've already read it in a comic, and if it's a little different, I'm like, okay, well, that's different. I like to see some new takes and new things happen.
And I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think you know this, but I don't have a lot of history within Inhumans, and I don't particularly love them, like the new, you know, their new, more visible role in the Marvel Universe. So I don't have any, I guess what I'm saying is I don't have any baggage when I feel like it has to follow something.
Yeah.
And I'm just enjoying it for what it is. It also, I think, helps a little for me, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't enjoy it anyhow, but I'm actually watching it on break at work.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's just something to put in and it's enjoyable. I enjoy watching it while it's on, and you know, like you said, it's not the best TV show I've ever seen, but it's enjoyable. It's entertaining. So Have you watched it, Chris, or no?
No, I have no interest one way or the other, really.
Yeah.
I really like the Inhumans, so like,
I know. See, we're coming at it from two different. You're a huge fan of the Inhumans. I really don't have any feelings about them at all. But and yet, both enjoy the TV
see,
show.
I own all their first appearances except for two issues before, or issue 36, which is the first appearance of Medusa.
You gotta get that.
So, that's the only one I'm missing. A matter of fact, when Chris was talking about it, I was looking to see if I could find something in decent shape that wasn't too high.
I think it's okay for people not to like stuff, but yeah, I mean, people go too far with it, or I think they should just leave people who like it alone, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's okay to be critical of stuff.
Oh,
I mean,
I'm critical of stuff, but I don't like try to convince somebody that loves it to not like it and say, well, why don't you see this?
Right,
why can't you see this? Why isn't this like this? I'm like, my middle finger goes up at that point.
Oh,
you know?
My goodness. Well, I don't go that far, but I understand what you're saying is that it's fine not to like something, but you don't have to try to
convince me of all the flaws if I enjoy it.
How bad
you know?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I hear you.
I don't want
to. Yeah, I mean, I'm agreeing with you. Like, I know that's not what you're saying, but.
Right.
Oh,
Mabel's disagreeing with you though. She watched The Inhuman. She told me. She told me
she
it
liked
sucked.
It. Right? What?
She said it sucked.
It sucked, really.
Well, see, that's different because Harley loves it, man. When Lockjaw when Lockjaw hits the screen, man, she's fixated, man.
Oh yeah.
She loves some Lockjaw. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misinterpreted her. She was just saying she wants to go. Play with the dog in the that she sees out the window.
Oh yeah,
I got confused in my doggies.
Yeah, Harley.
We don't have any pets in my house anymore.
What?
We don't have any pets in my house anymore.
Well, you got two kids. It's kind of the same.
Not really.
Just more complicated. They're just more complicated.
So, Rob, do you have another one? Or?
Yeah. I think we're going to get a dog next year, though.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So, the last one that I grabbed and read this morning was The Spectacular Spider-Man, number 27, which was the last issue of the run that I still didn't own. Of the regular issues, I still need annual 1 and 3, and then I'll have the entire series.
What number was that again?
Number 27.
Ah.
And it took me a long time to get it because it's a little bit more it's actually the most expensive issue in the entire run. It's the first Frank Miller's first Daredevil. Daredevil's a guest star in this issue, and he is the guest penciler. It's the first time he ever drew Daredevil. So for that reason, it's actually more expensive than issue number one or any of the other issues after that. So it took me a while to find one for a decent price, and I didn't need to spend a lot of money on this. And but I actually got saw a good deal on it, Mike, that same place that we got your what did we get for you, the crack comic?
Yeah, Smash.
Yeah. So same guy, Super World. So he's really a very easygoing guy, and just very responsive. Like, you send him an email, he writes right back and stuff. And he's got some fair prices, I think, and a lot of stuff that isn't slabbed, which is nice too.
Yeah, because most of the stuff that you get slabbed, I want to break it open anyway. So it's
yeah. This is and then you're paying extra money normally, depending on what the
only good thing is when you purchase it, you're sort of getting a more certified version of some third party grading it. Yeah,
and you might want that depending on what book you're actually picking up. But for the random book, it's nothing that you necessarily need, you know.
Yeah, like even with this Medusa book, like I'm actually looking at non-graded, but man, I don't agree with some of them, you know. Like, I look at the image and I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I go with this CGC and then just crack the seal, I'll be okay.
yep, exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, this was a good issue. This picked up from the previous where Spider-Man is had been fighting the Masked Marauder, and he had used some sort of a strobe on him and rendered Spider-Man blind. So Daredevil was there as well, and he's there helping Spidey just get – and, of course, at this point early on, this is still relatively early on. It's 78. I should actually say it's actually Bill Mantlo was the writer, and I said that Frank Miller was the penciler. So it was interesting because they don't know each other's identities yet. But Daredevil, so he has no idea Daredevil is blind, but Daredevil is actually helping him get to a safe spot and everything else. And then Daredevil actually talks to a doctor that he's used in the past, and they examine Spider-Man, and it looks like they think that it says his optic nerves are still intact, so it looks like probably we'll see again, but they can't actually tell like if it will be a full recovery or a partial recovery, whatever. And throughout this comic book, Spidey has two or three breakdowns where he just starts smashing stuff because he's feeling so angry and frustrated about the fact that he can't see. He actually destroys the doctor's office, the examining room that they're in, because he's so angry, which I didn't think that was a way to thank the doctor for seeing him. But he beat up the examining room pretty well. So what had happened is he had put a spider tracer on the Marauder's cape, so he can still track that with his spider sense. So him and Daredevil go after the Marauder, and Daredevil doesn't let on that with his enhanced senses he can actually track the tracer himself, but he wants to keep Spidey feeling positive and not sinking back down to depression. So he's kind of letting Spidey take the lead, and he'll kind of aim his arm for him where he needs to shoot a web and so forth to get to the place where the Marauder is. The Marauder is trying to blackmail the mayor of New York on behalf of the Magia, or Magia. I don't know how to pronounce it, but he's created the Tri-Man, and the Tri-Man can, apart from being a white humanoid in a green like underwear, he can also transform into a bird creature. And then his third incarnation is that he's a bomb droid, and he's going to let him go off in the middle of New York with this. He's actually an atomic bomb. If they don't turn over New York City to the Magi immediately. So Daredevil and Spidey jump in and start fighting them. But Daredevil's kind of taken the brunt of the Marauders' minions. And the Tri-Man turns into his bird mode and crashes out the window and actually knocks Spidey through the window too. So Spidey's blind. He's not holding on to the bird. He's actually now falling. So he crashes through the window. He's on his way, falling to his death as this Tri-Man bird mode is flying off to explode in the middle of New York City. And that's how the cliffhanger ends. And although I hate to ruin anything for you guys, it turns out Spidey doesn't fall to his death and survives. And they end up saving New York City.
Spoilers.
Yep, sorry. Jeez. Sorry.
I haven't read that issue. I don't own that issue. And you know how I've worked on Daredevil. I need to get this.
Yeah, you got to get it.
Because it's not a Daredevil title, but it's a key Daredevil issue.
And it's as much a Daredevil story as it is a Spidey story. It happens to be in Spectacular, but yeah, Daredevil's featured from the first page to the last. So it was a really good issue, and it was kind of cool knowing that was the first time Frank Miller ever drew Daredevil.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look this up.
I enjoyed reading that one.
It might make it into my Howard the Duck purchase.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, it's a little bit more expensive. If you do go my comic shop, those tend to be a little probably more expensive than.
Yeah,
you can
but
find
I'm them. Comparing so it with eBay, and they're relatively
the same.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, but so I'm happy. I've finally got the full run. For the longest time, you needed 5, 6 in this issue. I found 5 and 6, and I just got this one. And so I just need a couple of the annuals, and I'm done with Spectacular.
Cool.
Yep.
Well, my last book is Adventures into Fear. And I'm trying to find this in the database, but it's not coming up. It's weird.
It doesn't come up?
Yeah,
the whole
Adventures
title?
Into Darkness, but there's no Into Fear. Which
is that
is
what
weird
it says?
Because if you search for Fear,
is it Marvel?
Oh, it's Inside of Fear. That's why the title, they never changed it.
Usually
what a comic base does is when the indices inside the inner cover changes the name officially, it switches to a different title, and then it'll start with that number. So this should have started with, you know, 14 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this is Adventures into Fear number 14. Actually, is it 14? Maybe it's not. Let me see.
Is it the one with Man-Thing on the cover?
Yeah. This.
Oh, they all have Man-Thing on the cover. I see.
Maybe it's not. It is actually 10.
10?
Yes.
Oh, God.
So it's 10 because it's not a Steve Gerber issue. That's what was throwing me off. So I don't own this issue. This was another Marvel Unlimited late night read. And this is by Jerry Conway and has art by, is it Don Heck? Yeah, I think it's Don Heck. It's either him or Gary Morrow, but
Gary Morrow, it says.
Yeah, Gary.
Oh, it says Don Huck too. I see that.
Yeah, I don't remember who's the artist is on this because the Adventures into Fear, if you read it in Marvel Unlimited, it doesn't have the back content. You know how some of these books had the Man-Thing story and then additional 8 pages or so of another story.
Yeah.
Well, or a reprint of another story. Like this one might say reprints Tales of Suspense number 17. Or something to that effect. It just has the Man-Thing part, which is only like, if you read just the Man-Thing part, it's only like 10 pages. Of
it drives me insane when they do that, by the way.
Yeah, when they break up the story.
Yeah, I'm buying the comic book.
I was pretty happy with the new Man-Thing, how they had the backup.
They
had like the Tales from the Crypt, like... They did the backup stories just like the old one did. I was pretty appreciative of that. And they were pretty good. I thought they were pretty good little nods to those types of stories. But this story was interesting, and it's very Gerber-ish about like what is happening. Because this one, Man-Thing is just walking around, brooding in the swamp. He can't talk like he did in the new incarnation, although it didn't last long. But he's there walking around, and he sees somebody throw a baby off of a bridge, like to kill the baby.
That's not nice.
So he just drops him, and he catches the baby, and then he just starts wandering around like he's gonna bring fear into the guy who dropped the baby. So what the story is him just going to find the mother and return the baby and also seek revenge on the boyfriend slash husband, it doesn't really say, that threw the baby off of the bridge to kill the baby. He's an awful shithead. I mean, he's just like a total abusive person, and he was jealous of the girlfriend or wife because she would pay attention to the baby instead of him. And Man-Thing sure went over there to seek revenge, and that guy pulled out a gun and he tried to protect his wife, you know, from the creature. He pulls out the gun, shoots Man-Thing, it doesn't do nothing. And then he strikes him with this fear thing, and he just hits to the ground. It's very much similar like Cloak, but when Cloak puts them into the cloak and they just come out, if they survive, they're just like decimated. That's what happens when they touch the Man-Thing, or the Man-Thing gives them the fire of his whatever they call it. But that's what it is. You return the baby, and the guy's just, she's, the wife is holding the husband up trying to say, are you okay, are you okay? And hopefully his fear put fear into him, so he'll never hurt the baby again. But it never says. But that's the story.
Cool. So you've been kind of on a Man-Thing kick too.
Matt Gerber mostly, and this was not written by Gerber, but I didn't want to start with issue 11, so I wanted to read this one. I love the cover to this one too, and like
oh, the cover's awesome.
I don't own this one, but this is like the horror. I just love him. How these guys are, these guys are not in the story that are shooting him, but he is protecting the baby, so it is partially true.
Yeah, that's cool. Very nice.
Yeah.
Chris, do you have another one?
No, I'm all done.
All done?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm all done, too.
All right.
You got any more, Mike?
No, just to say that I've read a lot of Howard the Duck, and I really, really, really like it. So, like, I'm really getting my money's worth on the Marvel Unlimited, for sure. Especially
that's, that's good.
Yeah. Reading a lot of stuff that I read Blink, which I talked about. I finished that, and then I started Age of Apocalypse. But to tell you the truth, I wasn't feeling it. So I read X-Men Chronicles 1 and 2, and then I read X-Men Alpha, which kind of kicks off the event, but it's more in the future from the Chronicles. Like, Chronicles took place in the past, and then Alpha jumps you into this, the Age of Apocalypse storyline, even though I think chronologically it's a different order, but like order of publication. But you know what? I bought X-Men Alpha back in the day, and I read it, and I didn't like it, and I didn't buy anymore. So that's why I jumped off of Age of Apocalypse, because when I reread it now, I was like, man, this stuff is familiar to me. I was like, I remember this stuff. Like, I didn't remember all the details, but I remember quite a bit from that story, especially the Bishop part. And I remembered the Rogue relationship with Magneto, and Gambit being jealous. And I was like, I remember this stuff. I said, that's weird. Do I own it? And sure enough, I owned it. And then I never continued with any of the other stuff. So I kind of left it, and I'll come back to it at some point. But I was reading that on digitally as well.
Pretty cool.
I definitely don't like the art of that period, though. Like, Sabretooth, his forearms are almost as big as the Hulk's. Like, they're freaking amazingly big.
So, with the movies that we're going to pick?
Yeah.
I don't know quite for sure what I'm picking yet. I'm going to let you know by the end of the day, but... is anyone highly opposed to reading their movie?
Oh,
in other words, if it's in a different language and it's got subtitles.
Oh, no, I'll watch horror with subtitles. I watch with closed caption most of the time anyway. It doesn't bother me.
What about you, Christopher?
No, I'm fine with that.
Right. I don't know that mine will. I just don't want to pick something because some people just can't stand subtitles.
As long as it's 10 years or older, that's the rule.
Yep.
Yeah, that's fine with me. I don't mind.
I'll pick something by tonight then.
And I don't mind paying a little bit for it to rent it.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at all the Prime stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much on Prime, I can pick something that's free.
Yeah, Prime, there's definitely more stuff as far as older horror movies than Netflix. That's why I asked you guys if you had it, because I looked at Netflix, there's newer stuff, but
Netflix is almost like 5 years or old, like newer. In other
yeah,
words,
yeah.
It's like, wow, I couldn't find one thing. Just
yeah.
I actually like Amazon's searching better too than Netflix.
Oh yeah.
Netflix is almost like, here's what you would like. Here's, you know, and it does it by that order.
Yep.
And I don't like that. I'd rather see for myself what the library is.
The one thing that I don't like is that if I'm searching for, let's say, Prime Horror on my tablet, it just gives me, like, a random sampling of probably, like, 50 movies. But you could, if you actually look... you know, on your computer, I mean, you see the hundreds that they actually have.
Yeah.
So then the trick is just, you know, make note of what you're looking for or put it on your watch list. And then if you're going
to
use
your tablet. Yeah,
that's
what I did is I went to the computer and looked.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
That's the way to go.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it just keeps showing you like the same 30, 40 or 50 or whatever.
Over and over again.
Yeah. And then you scroll through on the computer like, oh my God, I had no idea. They had all the stuff because I never see it.
So I'll just warn you because I've already seen my movie, but I just watched it. I had Wednesday off, believe it or not, because of all the overtime I worked on the previous week. So I took Wednesday off, but
I don't believe it.
I was able to when it starts off, it's really dark, like. It looks like it's really bad film quality, but it's because it's filmed with like in the dark on blue light.
Uh-huh.
And then it clears up as soon as that opening scene. The opening scene is just like setting up the premise, and then it clears up, and then you're back into 80s light type movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I won't I won't shut it off then.
Be patient.
Exactly.
All right.
All right. Well, sounds good.
You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com or on the Twitters at Rob Krieger, like Seeger, and at Mike Myers Brunch and at Mythmaking ETC is Chris. And emails. Do we ever give out your email, Rob? I don't know if you want it out, but mine is mike@comicbooknoise.com, mythmakingetc@gmail.com, and if you have one that you want to give out.
Yeah, I don't really have one. I obviously have one, but it's just my own personal one, so yeah.
I'm probably not
going to give that out. Yeah.
And what else am I missing? Leave an iTunes review if you can. I don't even know if anybody uses iTunes anymore. But I don't know how else to promote stuff other than retweet us if we retweet the episodes, like to help visibility of the show. But I think that's about it.
Think so.
I'm gonna go play with my man thing.
Oh, the giant size man thing, or
yeah,
just
giant sized? Yeah, giant size man thing.
Sounds like a fun afternoon for you, then.
Yeah, I haven't read a lot of Man Thing, but I've read it sporadically. so like Howard the Duck, I'm learning a lot.
That's cool. Are you just gonna send Barb away for the day?
No.
Tell her to go somewhere.
No, I probably will be bagging and boarding and merging comics the rest of the day. I mean, we have to take care of some errands, but I need to get the comics back off the table. I'm not happy with DCBS being their move.
I was just gonna say that, Mike.
Really made my books like on a bad schedule. Late and on a bad day.
What happened?
Well, they moved locations, and they really didn't tell their customers. And it happened when all this started. It happened on a holiday week, so you're like, okay, that's okay. It's a holiday week. I expect to lose a day or two. Yeah. And then I got it 3 days late, and then I had like one shipment that arrived on time.
Me too. And then the last shipment for me.
Yeah, and then. And then it went back to like a 2-day delay. So I'm like, I sent Cameron a note. I said, is this the norm because of your location? And I'm going to get things 2 days late every time. And he says he didn't think so. He said they're still dealing with training the new employees to be on a regular, because of the move, they lost all their A-team. Yeah. Their A-team that knew how they were in like they were a well-oiled machine, you know. They got the books in. They know how to sort them. They'd get them in shipping boxes on time and then ship them out as fast as possible, humanly possible.
For me, you know, I'm bi-weekly or twice a month rather, and I was getting them on Friday, which was like amazing. You know, I'm like, oh, you know, I used to go to the comic book store to pick them all up on a Thursday. So it's really only one day later. Well, I don't know if this is everywhere or if it's just here, but FedEx does not deliver here in this area on Mondays. I don't know if that's everywhere or what, but we do not get Monday deliveries.
Do you get Saturday delivery?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So if it doesn't make it by Saturday, which it did not, means I'm not getting them until Tuesday. So it's expected this Tuesday. It's just that's a huge time frame for me from a Friday to a Tuesday.
Well, it's more for you because you're pretty much a current reader. For me, I could sort of care less, except it gets my process out of sync.
Yeah.
Because I usually use Sunday to get things off of the table and then when I receive it on Tuesday, it just jacks everything up. Like it, because I'm work days are like freaking horrible for me, and I can barely get into Gotham by Geeks on Tuesday, so it's not a good I don't like the schedule.
For me, it would be if it ends up being consistently Tuesdays, then it will, like, I'll just end up self-adjusting because it's just going to take me that longer, you know, read my stack through. So I usually can get done about a day or two after the next shipment comes.
Yeah.
But I just happened to really, actually, if I had read more yesterday and read any new ones today, I would be all done. But, you know, if it's every Tuesday, then it'll probably be okay. But if it comes sometimes on a Friday and sometimes on a Tuesday, it's just going to kind of throw me all out of whack. You know, what I don't understand is, I mean, I'm assuming they're getting their comics on a Tuesday just like any other comic shop would. So I don't understand, like, why they can't get that.
Well, they're, I mean, from what I understood, the move was driven by business. It was so they could be closer to the distributor to get books. So it seems like it would, in the overall picture of things, they get things faster.
Right, so
I actually, my hope is that they're in a transition of training their people, all these new people, to be like the previous employees. And then once they get past that, things will go back to normal. At least that's my hope.
But that would be nice.
I guess it could be based on your FedEx, too. Like you said, you know, Mondays or... It could be based on how your FedEx ships in your local area or within one of the states that it didn't have to go through before. Do you know what I mean? Oh, because now they're in a different location, so things are logistically going to change.
Yep, that's true too.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hate to bother Chris with all this physical media bullshit, but...
That's okay. I think you guys will survive. That's my input.
Oh, I'll survive. Really?
It
affects more people like Rob, even though he's on bi-weekly shipping, but because he reads things pretty timely.
All these problems of privilege that we have.
I don't care. I would go, like, this change might drive me to bi-monthly. I just don't want to lift a 75 to if my box is almost, you know, if it's 40 pounds now on a weekly basis, I don't want to lift 80 pounds.
Well, just tell
I'm getting older. I can't
half
lift
of
it.
Half of what you buy it now.
You can just get one of those like little
dollies.
What do you call them that you use to lift a heavy box? Like
a dolly.
A dolly, yeah.
Yeah. Huh?
Just get a dolly. Well,
Barb had me buy a stair crawler, which is pretty interesting. I'm going to have to try it out with a couple of short boxes and see if it works. It's supposed to hold up to 80 pounds, so we'll see.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like a stair crawler, so it will help me get stuff to the basement or out of the basement, which is cool. All right, well... We'll see you guys later, and thanks for pick your movies as soon as you can, because I'll try to watch one this week and one next week.
You got it.
Because I'm still watching Wynonna Earp, and I gotta finish that.
All right, we'll see what we
can
do.
Sounds good.
We'll get them to you as soon as possible.
Yeah, the older the better. No.
The older the better.
Yeah. Well, I want to watch something like in the 80s or 70s or prior. It, the older, the better.
The 1910s?
I'll pick a silent one.
I watched a lot. I'll watch Nosferatu again. I'll watch any of those silent ones. One of my picks was going to be Shadow of the Vampire, which was based on that.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a cool concept. Like, the horror is that the guy who was the actor in Nosferatu is actually a vampire.
I know, it's awesome.
It's an awesome plot, man. When I saw that movie, it blew me away. It's very, if you like Nosferatu and Salem's Lot, because Salem's Lot has a vampire that looks very similar to the Nosferatu
vampire. Yes, that style.
Vampire. Yeah. It's very cool. All right, well, take it easy, guys.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, have a good one. Bye.
Bye.